You know what I love more than following court cases? Well, maybe almost as much. Cooking. I was never that great of a chef, and I'm still not the greatest, but I learned a lot through Home Chef. Home Chef delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients with step-by-step recipe cards right to your door. Not only do you essentially learn how to cook, but you save both time and money by not having to go to the grocery store and spend money on more ingredients than you need. Last night, my little amateur self made Normandy chicken with apple cream sauce, roasted fingerling potatoes, and arugula salad, something I never would have thought to make on my own. And because Home Chef is now a sponsor of this podcast, you can now all get $30 off of your first order, which is a great deal. Just go to homechef.com/courtjunkie. Hi, I'm Jillian, and welcome to another Court Junkie update. Before I get started, I want to, as always, thank everybody for listening, subscribing, sharing, and donating to this podcast. I appreciate each and every one of you. If you like this podcast, there's a number of ways you can help out with it. You can donate as little as a dollar on patreon.com/courtjunkie. You can leave me a review if you like the show, and you can support our sponsor at homechef.com/courtjunkie. I would also love to talk about these cases with you, so please consider joining our Facebook group called the Court Junkie Discussion Group, where we can chat about this case or anything else courtroom related. You can also find me on Twitter at Court Junkie Pod. Now on to the update. There was a big development in the Melissa Kalusinski case on Friday that I'm going to cover today. So if you haven't been following this case, please listen to episodes 1 and 2, as well as the first Court Junkie update episode. Otherwise, you might be pretty lost. These case updates are meant to be mini episodes, but with this case, there's just so much info to cover that I've decided to tackle this in 3 parts. First, I'm going to recap the case and what the main arguments were in the hearings. Next, I'll go over Judge Shaines's ruling. And lastly, I'll go pretty in-depth at how Melissa's team is planning on responding, all in today's episode. So to recap, Melissa is a former daycare worker who has spent almost 7 years in an Illinois prison, accused of throwing a 16-month-old baby named Benjamin King into the ground and killing him. Melissa's attorney, Kathleen Zellner, filed a petition in June 2015 alleging new evidence in the form of X-rays that had been recently discovered. Melissa's father, Paul Kalusinski, had received an anonymous phone call saying that there were additional X-rays at the coroner's office that had never made it into trial. Zellner and her team believe that these X-rays showed proof that there was no skull fracture, meaning that no murder had occurred. Melissa was granted an evidentiary hearing, and the judge announced his decision on whether he would be granting Melissa a new trial this past Friday. The hearing itself lasted over 3 days. There were 2 days in August and then a 3rd day in September. I cover these hearings in episode 2 and in the last case update, but here's a quick recap. Attorney Zellner presented evidence that right before trial, Melissa's trial attorney, Paul DeLuca, received 3 X-ray images of Ben's body from the prosecution. They were on a CD in JPEG format, which is a compressed version of the original TIFF files that were on the coroner's computer. The X-rays were unreadable, and neither the defense nor the prosecution really used them at trial. The original TIFF images, located on the coroner's computer, were recently discovered by the current Lake County coroner, Dr. Rudd, and he says the images are significantly clearer and easier to read than those JPEGs. He testified in August that he believes these clearer X-rays show that there was a prior injury that caused Ben's death, and that the evidence doesn't match the story of Melissa having thrown him to the ground. There was also a revelation in the hearings that it's possible, and maybe even likely, that the X-ray images were not only saved as JPEGs and then given to the defense, but that they had been intentionally modified too. And who could forget perhaps the biggest bombshell of all? As you'll recall in episode 2, one thing that came out in the hearings last month was the allegation that one of the state's expert witnesses perjured himself at Melissa's trial. Dr. Montes had testified at trial that he was present at the first autopsy and that he had felt Ben's skull fracture with his own hands. But Dr. Paul Foreman, a deputy coroner at the Lake County Coroner's Office, testified for Attorney Zellner at the hearing and said that Dr. Montes was not only not present at the autopsy, but that he never even saw the body. In response, the state argued that the clear x-rays just don't matter, that the outcome at trial still would have been the same whether or not there was a skull fracture. They asked the judge to consider all of the evidence presented at trial and said that whether or not there was a skull fracture, it's insignificant. And as for Dr. Montes, the state said that if he did perjure himself on the stand, it would be impeachable evidence at best and not newly discovered evidence. So this past Friday, I headed over to the Waukegan courthouse to hear the ruling. The energy both inside and outside the courtroom was a little different this time than it's been in the past. Camped right outside the door were more news cameras than I think I've ever seen. Melissa's case has garnered a lot of attention in the area, and the camera crews were no doubt on top of it. The courtroom has always been full for Melissa's hearings, but this time it was packed, with reporters poised with their notebooks and pens, myself included, Melissa's family and friends, the Kingan family, and even a smattering of curious onlookers. Judge Shaines wasted no time diving right in, and about a minute into the reading of his opinion, I knew it wasn't going to be in Melissa's favor. He started off by saying that there is no doubt that both families wish that they could undo what happened that day in January 2009, but that they can't change the past. Judge Shaines then rejected Zellner and team's claims and sided with the state. He said Paul Kelyuzinski's and Dr. Rudd's sensational claim of new x-rays was not true. He said there was never a second set of x-rays and that they were just adjusted x-rays. He said that the court understands that Paul loves his daughter and would do anything to help her, but that the court must adhere to the facts. He then went over the hearing testimony that in June 2015, after Paul received that anonymous phone call about a second set of x-rays, Dr. Rudd came across the TIF files on the coroner's computer. And after a flurry of contact, he said that Dr. Rudd famously announced that there was a second set of x-rays, but that it never happened. Judge Shaines says that there were only three x-rays, and without a second set of x-rays, most of the defense's claims fall apart like a house of cards. And the irony, Judge Shaines says, is that it may not have mattered to the outcome of the trial anyway. He went on to say that Dr. Choi, the coroner who had performed the autopsy, said at trial that he saw a skull fracture with his own eyes, and that another expert at trial, Dr. Greenbaum, said she saw a fracture in the autopsy photos. He said the jury at trial also heard some evidence from the defense that the fracture may not have existed, meaning that the fracture didn't matter to the case since the jury still found Melissa guilty. Judge Shaines ended his ruling announcement by saying that much of the defense's claims amount to Monday morning quarterbacking. Immediately after Judge Shaines was done speaking, Attorney Zellner held up a piece of paper to the judge and told him that it was a notice of appeal and that they would be filing an appeal immediately. The mood inside the courtroom was mixed. I think that the Kingans probably felt a sense of relief, but Melissa's families and supporters were dejected, some of them in shock. Melissa's family sat there in the front row until everybody else had filed out of the courtroom. They were clearly disappointed, but they said that they had been expecting it. Attorney Zellner met them in the hallway and reminded them that this was expected and that she was actually happy to be taking this to a different court and out of Lake County. There are a few things I think are important to note about this case, and specifically about the area in which it took place, Lake County, Illinois. I know I said it back in episode 1, but it bears repeating. Lake County has exonerated 6 people who were wrongfully convicted in the last 6 years. That's an incredible statistic, in my opinion, especially if you're a taxpayer there. There's a New York Times article I recently came across thanks to a listener who told me about it. The article was written in 2011, and it's about Juan Rivera, a man who is one of those six exonerees. Juan Rivera spent 20 years in prison after being wrongfully convicted of murder, and he has since been awarded $20 million, the largest ever settlement of its kind in U.S. history. And this all occurred in Lake County. The Times article goes on to say, few offices have fought post-conviction evidence with as much gusto as the Lake County State's Attorney's Office, which is coming under increased scrutiny for what defense lawyers and law professors suspect is an alarming number of wrongful convictions. So what does this have to do with Melissa? Well, it makes me wonder that if Melissa is innocent, would the Lake County State's Attorney's Office fight as hard as they could for this conviction to stand in order to not add on to the already alarming rate of wrongful convictions? I'm not sure of the answer, but it may be something to think about. After the ruling was over and everybody had left the courtroom, Attorney Zellner held a press conference to go over what she says are errors in Judge Shaines's ruling.
The judge basically just rehashed the prosecutor's closing argument and totally avoided addressing the metadata and what we were saying. He's caught up in the politics, he's caught up in phone calls. None of that has anything to do with this. When he says that, oh, the coroner's computer defaulted to JPEG, no expert came in and said you'd ever turn over a JPEG image. No JPEG images were stored on the coroner's computer. You had the option of pushing TIFF and putting the TIFF data on a disk. And that's what should have been done. If this discovery was done in good faith, the TIFF data would have been put on the disk and everybody would have known that there was no skull fracture. End of story. It's so unbelievably simple, the judge didn't address it.
When Kathleen is saying that the judge ignored the metadata with regards to the X-ray images, she's referring to the fact that in Judge Shaines's 50-page opinion, he says that there is no material difference between the TIFF and JPEG X-rays. And then Judge Shaines included a side-by-side comparison of the JPEG version with the TIFF version. And although he says in the opinion that the images are substantially similar, Dr. Rudd disagrees. Dr. Rudd also spoke after the ruling, and he answered that very question.
The second clear set shows that the skull does not have a fracture. It also outlines the skull better in a light bulb shape, which should have been a clue to whoever's reading it that there's something going on in the brain that's expanding the skull, and that is fluid, essentially edema fluid. There was so much done wrong with the autopsy, it's incredible. The malpractice that occurred under Choi was phenomenal. First of all, he looks at the X-rays and doesn't save them. That's evidence. You put up the films and you let them go back into the original raw data. You should have copied them. They should have been saved. Secondly, his own pictures clearly show a chronic subdural membrane, which he totally misses. He reads the microscopics, totally misses it. He didn't save any of the brain. He didn't save any of the skull. He didn't submit tissue to confirm the alleged skull fracture, which we now know is an accessory suture. This is malpractice. He would be sued so badly he would never practice again.
The importance of the skull fracture might need to be clarified a bit. Zellner and her team aren't arguing that the skull fracture caused Ben's death. They're arguing that the state used the existence of the skull fracture to establish that the manner of Ben's death was a homicide, as opposed to an accident or a self-inflicted injury.
So people have confused the cause of death. We are not talking about the cause of death. We're talking about the manner of death. How did the state elevate this case from an accident to a homicide? The way they did it was they said there was a linear skull fracture. Dr. Zimmerman testified, that's the one medical finding you're most likely to see if it's a homicide. So what do we have now? We've got no skull fracture. What did Dr. Zimmerman say? All the other injuries are consistent with an accident. It's that simple. This isn't complicated. People have misreported it. We're trying to change the cause of death. There isn't a second set of x-rays. Let me make that real clear. What we're saying is the first set of x-rays, the original x-rays on the coroner's computer were what should be turned over. They were not turned over. What they did was they put it in a JPEG format. As our expert who, amazingly, our expert had a degree in computer science. Theirs was, had a business degree, a two-year business degree, and he worked in customer complaints at Tiger. My expert had a four-year degree and has worked on infrared images for the Defense Department. So who does the judge rely on? He relies on the consumer complaint guy, who quite frankly had no idea what he was talking about, but he confirmed the original images. There were three, and they were in a TIFF format.
As you'll recall from my last update episode on Melissa's hearings, Kathleen Zellner had called to the stand an imaging expert named Jeff Mueller. Both the state and Melissa's team acknowledged his expertise, and Mueller testified that the JPEGs had been exported and then further altered before being given to the defense. In his opinion, Judge Shane says that Mueller corrupted the files on the coroner's computer when he made copies of them, something that Attorney Zellner says is untrue. She says Mueller produced a list of 719 images on the coroner's computer, and that Ben's image was the only one whose window width was reduced to a fraction of its original size, which she says demonstrated an intentional obscuring of the images, according to Mueller's testimony. Something else that will obviously be a main point in Attorney Zellner's appeal is the testimony that the state's expert, Dr. Montes, perjured himself on the stand at Melissa's trial.
Let me talk to you about the knowing use of perjury. Notice Dr. Montes was not brought in to testify. If someone accuses you of perjury, where was he? Where was Dr. Montes to come in and talk about examining the skull? He didn't come in, but you know what he testified to at trial? Yeah, when I examined the skull and I touched the fracture, you know who was standing there with me? Paul Foreman. It's Dr. Montes who puts Paul Foreman with him. And it's Paul Foreman who said that never happened. Now the judge was like, no, I don't know. I think those sutures, you know, that the sutures weren't put in till later. What does the judge rely on? A whole bunch of photographs that aren't dated. They have no dates on them. That's why I objected at the time. The skull was clearly back in place, but forget the sutures. The brain was dissected. Dr. Montes didn't touch the blood on the brain. The brain was chopped up and put into a bag. There was no blood. So just on that issue, judge never addressed that. But Dr. Montes should have shown up and said, no, I went in, I examined the skull.
In her appeal, Attorney Zellner will no doubt place emphasis on Dr. Montes's testimony. She says his testimony about the skull fracture being the result of a violent trauma at the hands of another was the key to the state's case and to the jury finding Melissa guilty. She says Judge Shaines also ignored that Dr. Montes could not have touched the blood on the brain on January 16 like he testified to, because the brain had been dissected the day prior. So even though Dr. Montes said he felt the stickiness of the blood and that he felt the skull fracture, Attorney Zellner says it's not even possible since the skull had been scraped and washed the day before. Also in her press conference, Attorney Zellner says Judge Shaines basically ignored the fact that the skull fracture was mentioned in the interrogation and trial over 200 times, making the skull fracture a material issue that affected the outcome of the trial.
Then the next big issue is, oh, but that skull fracture, it's not material. Well, it's so material that they're still claiming that it exists. In the closing argument, they're saying, oh, no, there's still a skull fracture. There never was a skull fracture. There never will be one. There is no skull fracture. A world-renowned pediatric neuroradiologist came in and looked at all of the images and said, There isn't a skull fracture, and no one saw a skull fracture in a clinical exam. Impossible. You cannot have the skull fracture missing on the clear x-ray, and then you see it. No, you don't see it. Now, if anybody thinks this woman got a fair trial, it's ridiculous. We've got the pathologist admitting that he missed the old injury. He missed that there's no skull fracture. I mean, you talk about pathetic. Now, I sent the judge my skull fracture index. You know how many times the skull fracture is referenced in this trial? By the prosecution and the defense, 243 times. I gave him People versus Smith about Pam Fish, who got caught up in a similar, a so-called forensic scientist who was caught manufacturing evidence. And the court said, the appellate court said, the state can't make something material, i.e. mentioning it in the opening, the closing, and in our case, 243 times. That makes it material. And then turn around when we go up on appeal and say, oh, no, that didn't matter. That didn't matter. The court said that's ludicrous. We are reversing on that basis. And that's what's going to happen in this case. The judge never mentions that case.
In addition to the state having placed so much importance on the skull fracture at trial, Attorney Zellner says that Melissa's trial attorney, Paul DeLuca, was deprived of the opportunity to effectively cross-examine the state's experts, namely Dr. Choi and Dr. Montes, about their claims that a skull fracture resulted from Melissa having thrown Ben to the ground. And as you'll recall, the skull fracture was also a huge part of Melissa's confession.
The other thing that's fascinating in the case is how much the skull fracture affected the alleged confession, because she's told that there's a skull fracture, okay? And she's also told you're not going to get any trouble by saying you threw him down on the floor. So just like Brendan Dassey in the case in Wisconsin, same story. I mean, it matches up in a very similar way, I think, to the Dassey case.
Attorney Zellner is pretty confident that they're going to win in the appeals court once they're out of Lake County.
This case is going to be reversed. Whether it happens on appeal, whether it happens in federal court, this will never hold up on the underlying data. Because what you'd have to conclude is, it's okay to compress the images way down, mislead the defense. It's okay if your pathologist doesn't recognize an old injury value. That's okay. You're getting a fair trial here. That is never going to work. I mean, this, I've done 17 of these successfully. This is not going to hold up on appeal.
So now we wait. The appeals process can be quite lengthy, so it might be a while before we hear of anything else in the case. But I'll be sure to update when we do. I'll be posting Judge Shaines' opinion in the Court Junkie discussion group on Facebook, as well as on my website, courtjunkie.com. Just click on this episode. And that's all for today's update. There likely won't be more movement in this case for quite a while. But if you're interested in discussing it, you can join the Free Melissa Kelyuszynski Facebook group, which is run by her family. And you can also join my Court Junkie discussion group on Facebook, where we can talk all day long about this case, or any other case for that matter. You can follow me on Twitter at CourtJunkiePod, and you can also email me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. To help support this podcast, you can donate as little as a dollar a month at patreon.com/courtjunkie. And you can also please support our sponsor at homechef.com/courtjunkie. Thanks for listening.